Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very, very happy Friday, February 13th, 2026. We are rapidly approaching the month of March and the college basketball season. February is not quite half over, but an early St. Valentine's Day to everybody. I'm here with Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Chase, I'm great. The season keeps rolling along here. I saw a Bobby Hurley press conference where a reporter asked him about ASU's plans to improve on the boards, and his response was, "Are you kidding me? We've got seven games left. So if we can't rebound now, chances are we're not going to be able to rebound." And you know, it kind of hit me like we're getting towards the end of the season here.
We definitely are. Now, interestingly enough, last season, even though we didn't make the NCAA tournament, we ended up playing until April because we were in that that special tournament. Well, hopefully we'll make the NCAA tournament this year, notwithstanding this week's loss to Ohio State. But it was a road split, which is really what we needed with an injured Chad Baker-Mazzara. You know, this team it kind of gotten fairly predictable in a lot of these games, especially on the road, where we really just play very tight games since the Michigan State debacles. I am assuming we'll probably play some tight games going forward the rest of the season. You know, I'm actually not too down on the performance against Ohio State. I know they outscored us by 10 in the second half, but there was blaming the refs. There's a little bit of home cooking there, and the decisive play in the game was a drive by Bruce Thornton where essentially there was a ball screen. He got switched onto Gabe Dines. Gabe Dines would have blocked the shot for sure. I mean, 90% chance Gabe Dines blocks that shot. But Royal essentially was screening out Kofi as a post up, which is a common thing to do these days where you act like you're posting up, but you're actually screening. But he not only screened out Kofi, he actually body checked or kind of just stuck his butt out and just clipped Dines going to the basket. And for some reason, they called him Fallon Dines, fouling Thornton, which was completely ridiculous. But that was that turned into a 3-point play, and that was the decisive play of the game. If not for that, I think it would have gone down to whoever had the ball last would have won. I don't know if you had a thought of that one, Nick.
Yeah, Chase, it was a terrible call. You see a lot of home cooking in the Big Ten these days, especially at the end of games. I remember seeing that Wisconsin Indiana game in Assembly Hall where they called a ridiculous foul at the end on John Blackwell. So, and it was a decisive call. So you're seeing a lot of that. But you know, with regard to that particular play, it was definitely a moving screen, and they gave the foul to Dines, but. You know, even without Baker-Mazzara, I didn't think Ohio State was significantly better than us at all. You know, those seemed like two quality teams. And, you know, I love the way that we scratch and claw on the road. We're tough. You know, even with the lack of perimeter skill on this team with all the injuries, the team just kept battling. So, credit to Ohio State though, the 24 of 25 at the line for them was pretty ridiculous. So they, you know, were efficient there and kind of made the shots in the second half that they needed to make.
Yeah, and a few things to be said about that, obviously. But one is this game was a lot more important for Ohio State than it was for us. It was would have been a tier one win for us, but it would have been a tier two loss for them if they lose at home. They lose at home in that circumstance, they would then potentially be in a more difficult position to make the NCAA tournament. What's going on? They have a neutral site game tomorrow against Virginia. What's do you know what the deal with that is?
I think it's that Big Ten ACC challenge that they're doing.
Oh, so, okay. I guess we're not invited to that.
Yeah, I guess not. Maybe it's an old Big Ten.
Yeah, maybe it's an old
ACC.
And that's why I guess what we have the weekend off. I guess that makes sense. And then, well, that'll be a very important game for them. We'll see how they do in that. Virginia is a super weird team. You know, that's the Malik Thomas team. And they have De Ritter on that team, the foreign, the Euro recruit. Just I mean, heck of a coaching job by Ryan Odom coming moving over from VCU. Had been at Utah State in the era before Danny Sprinkle took over. Sprinkle kind of inherited that team, I think, even though he brought in Osabor himself from like Montana, right? I think Sprinkle definitely inherited a culture at Utah State that allowed him to succeed. He has not continued that culture at Washington, whereas Ryan Odom has really had success, some found success, VCU and now at Virginia. So big ups to him. But if you look at like the that the personnel at that he's got right now at Virginia, it just I mean this does not look like a killer team, but they're top 20 in KenPom and they're 21-3, and I'm very curious to see how Ohio State does with them.
Yeah, Chase. I mean, I think every year you see some teams where you have no idea how they're good, and then you have some teams that you have no idea how they're bad. And I think you kind of hit two of those with Virginia and Washington. Like Washington, that should be a tournament team. It's a tournament level roster. Then you look at Virginia and you think it's like a, maybe NIT or 500 level roster. But yeah, like Ryan Odom deserves a ton of credit for maxing out that team.
And by the way, I would not have looked at that roster and thought it's a 500 level roster. I mean, I would have thought this is not a team that's going to be in the postseason. They should have a losing record. They might even have a losing record outside of conference. I mean, when the second best player on your team is Malik Thomas, that does not sound like a power conference team, right? That sounds like a mid-major level team. And yet, what he's done in the ACC is pretty remarkable. They're now 10-2 in the ACC. And they beat SMU, Louisville, and North Carolina State. Pretty impressive what they've accomplished. So we'll see how Ohio State does with them. Ohio State, we saw this last season with them. They have a lot of shot makers. They don't play great defense, but they do have these guys who just hit shots. Thornton, Mobley, Royal. They really know how to score. We had on and off spells during that game where we didn't really play great defense, but we played pretty well overall, and then kind of ran into this, a little bit of a officiating, I think, circumstance in this game. I think the officials are thinking, look, this is much game is much more important for Ohio State. If they lose that, it becomes much more difficult for them to make the NCAA tournament. We'll see what they do with Virginia this weekend. But down the stretch, Ohio State is Virginia, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Iowa, Purdue, Indiana. And then Penn State, but it's a road game. So I mean, these are not like gimme games, and they're not. If they had lost to us, they potentially would have been in a position where they finish underwater in the Big Ten. And this kind of them beating us basically took care of that. Like they'll probably finish at least 10-10 in the conference. And from recent history, what you need to do in the Big Ten is either win 20 regular season games or win 10 games. Go 500 in the conference, go 10-10. That will usually get you in. And Ohio State looks like they'll get in on one of those two marks at this point, is my guess. So it was an important game for them. For us, now we have a week off. Hopefully, Chad Baker-Mazzara is back at full health on Wednesday. Huge home game against Illinois. Kylan Boswell is supposed to be back this weekend. They're playing Indiana on Sunday. Coming off two losses, Illinois is a very kind of interesting team because it's not really the team they're expecting. Petrovic to be like kind of their big guard, come in and lead the charge for Illinois, and instead we've seen this freshman who was not, I don't think it's a top 40 recruit even. Keenan Wagler has just been amazing, really impressive. Kind of a shooting first, turn himself into a point guard, shooting first point guard. He's leading them down the stretch against Wisconsin with both Stojakovic not playing and with Boswell not playing. So, I mean, Illinois has got a lot of weapons on that team. Some of the weapons are different weapons than was originally anticipated, but this is a tough team and should be really interesting.
Right. They're number one in the country in KenPom offense. So they really do everything well. I mean, they can shoot the three, they can shoot the two, they make their free throws, they offensive rebounds, and they don't turn the ball over. So The skill level is extremely high on that team, and yeah, I mean, Wagler could do it all. I think he's basically a lock to be a top 10 pick at this point, and yeah, definitely a real chance he goes in the top five. So, yeah, just unbelievable skill level for a freshman, and pretty good athletes, and can pass. So they're going to be really hard to guard. They're not the most athletic team, so they do have some vulnerabilities on defense, and they do struggle to turn you over on defense. So, I think we'll get our looks at the rim, but they do kind of play that pack line where they just try to rebound with their size, and cover up for some of their athletic limitations. So, yeah, I mean, I like that we have the week off here to get healthy, hopefully get Chad back. But they're not the kind of team that's going to overwhelm you athletically. So, I definitely could see us being competitive in this one.
Yeah, rebounding is going to be definitely going to be a key in that game. They're basically good at kind of all aspects of offense. They shoot pretty well from the outside. They get to the line pretty well. The offense really rebound pretty darn well. Nothing, one thing really sticks out. We're going to definitely need, I mean, rebounding, defensive rebounding is going to be a huge key. Trying to keep them off the boards. And we'll see how it goes. You know, if we can guard the three point line, I feel better about where we'll be in this game, especially playing at home, but we'll have to see. And then on the heels of that, we have Oregon at home. I mean, that's like the most must-win game, but must-win games. We lose that game, I don't even see a path to the NCAA tournament without winning the Big Ten potentially. But hopefully it's a game we can win. And then from there on out, the remaining games are two games against UCLA, a visit up north to that Washington team, and a home game against Nebraska, which, you know, as you know, kind of come back to earth a little bit. And after starting 20-0, they've lost three of four, but they played some tough teams, Michigan, Illinois, and Purdue, and they, you know, for the most part, played them pretty tough. So, you know, all that being said, it's going to be a big ending to the season. We're going to. Now we have both Arenas and Baker Mazzara. We're going to need Chad to play kind of smart basketball, not kind of go crazy. And I think, you know, if we play like what we're capable of playing, I think we can, you know, win a few games down the stretch here and you know, get us in a position to make the NCAA tournament.
For sure. I mean, it's tricky because you don't have any games where you're overwhelmingly favored outside of that Oregon game. But then again, like you don't have any death games like going to Michigan or Michigan State left. So you have a lot of games in that like 25 to 60% chance, at least on KenPom. And you're going to have to pick off a few of those to make the dance. But it seems pretty doable. I guess, Chase, if you had to power rank the remaining games from, I guess, most hard to least hard, how would you do it?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if you know, between Illinois at home and playing at Pauley, you know, the week after, I mean, those are probably the two hardest. I don't want to discount Nebraska. I think they're a really tough team. I just think, you know, I think realistically we can play Nebraska at home pretty t I think they look to me a little bit, you know, some similarities to Indiana, where if we play the game when we can play, I think we can, you know, we can win that game at home. We might lose it though. I wouldn't. So I would go with Illinois toughest, at Pauley second toughest, probably home against Nebraska third toughest, probably UCLA at home fourth toughest, at Washington. I mean, look, this is tough because, you know, KenPom has Washington at 47. It's a team that we, you know, just outscored us by whatever, 28 points the last time we played them at Galen. Now we're playing an away game. But, you know, Washington has now lost 7 of 9 games. Now the easiest part of their schedule is now coming up. They have home game against Minnesota. They're at Maryland. They're at Wisconsin, at Rutgers. And then they have us home with Wisconsin, and then they're away Oregon. I mean, KenPom actually has them favored in all those games, but they literally just lost to Penn State at home. So they don't have Desmond Claude anymore. It's not, I you start to wonder how much, you know, how important these games are to these players at this point, and how much they're thinking, you know, the season's kind of a loss. before that loss to Penn State at home, since they were favored in all the remaining games, they had a legitimate argument that, like, hey, if we just win out, or get close to winning out, we can make the NCAA tournament still. Now, I don't think anyone would believe that now. I mean, sure, they could win the rest of their games and, potentially take a crack at it, but this is a team that the sum does not seem to equal the its parts, and the whole didn't equal the sum of its parts. And I think we have a revenge factor on our minds, and I think that will be not as tough as trying to play UCLA, and then obviously the easiest would probably be playing home against Oregon. Where were you at with this?
Yeah, I generally agree there. I think you go either way on the Illinois at home versus UCLA on the road. I do like that the remaining road games on the schedule, they're in the Western time zone, so that helps. You don't have to do the big west to east travel, like go out to Happy, Valley or State College, Pennsylvania or anything like that, which is nice. So yeah, I would group those two, and then I would probably say after that, the Nebraska home game is, I would group that with the Washington road, I think. I'm just not totally a believer in that Nebraska team yet. And, the UCLA road game, you probably throw that one in there too. So I kind of view it as Illinois and UCLA and your like first bucket, and then kind of the Nebraska, Washington, UCLA, all in that second tier. And you could order those, I think, however you want. Those are going to be like challenging but winnable games.
So the big kind of news for SC over the last week or so, since we won that game against Indiana and Chad Baikmazar was hurt, it has been kind of the rise of Elijah Arenas. He's now scored 20 points in three consecutive games for SC after really struggling with even scoring in those early games. Didn't even get to double digits, and now he's averaging 26 points a game, I guess, over the last three games. His efficiencies have not been great, although against Indiana they were pretty good and not terrible. Against Penn State, 1 for 7 from three against Ohio State. That's a tough game. Made it up somewhat at the free throw line, but he's demonstrating now, and we've talked a lot about him on this podcast. He's demonstrating now he can score. He can score points against legit competition.
Yeah, you can. The efficiency goes up and down, but he's a difficult shot maker and can bail you out at the end of the shot clock in a lot of these games. At least with respect to the draft, I think that's where it gets really fascinating, right? Because these NBA teams, the analytics guys are going to say, do not draft this kid under any circumstance because of the efficiency and lack of assists, and rebound steals and blocks. Like those numbers are not going to check out, but then the eye test scouts guys are going to be all over him. He's long, clearly has shooting potential, but just needs the in-game experience, to get the reps at this level, to become more efficient and whatnot. So it's going to be a fascinating draft decision, but I think, the USC team as constructed, especially without Chad, does need him to take some difficult shots, because the team just lacks shot makers and on-ball talent right now.
So getting into these draft decisions, it's interesting. I'm starting to see his name pop up kind of at the end of the first round in some of these mock drafts. Still hasn't hit some others. So he's in this, he's kind of found himself in this predicament where he's in the most talented draft we've had in like a generation, probably. I mean, it's been a long time since we saw a draft like this, and I mean a real long time. I'm thinking back to like the draft that had LeBron and Dwayne Wade, and was Melo was in that draft as well, right?
Yeah, Chris Bosh.
Chris Bosh. I don't know if these guys will end up being Hall of Famers like on that level, but these are like high performing college players. We have this season around nine or so freshmen in college that are doing somewhat, I mean, very rare, putting up some very rare advanced stats and overall stats. So you've got, your Darren Peterson from Kansas, who's the big knock on him. I think he would be the legit number one pick, except for he's already missing games in college that are questionable. So you're starting to think, is this guy going to be a guy that's going to be sitting all the time on load management? DeBansa, not sitting at all for BYU, putting up big numbers, bit of a volume scorer, doesn't quite have the efficiency, doesn't have necessarily have the assist, but seems to bring it every night he's out there. Boozer brings it every night, highly efficient player, but doesn't quite have the athleticism of some of the big stars that you think in the NBA. But you can't deny just how skilled a basketball player he is. Kingston Flemings for Houston has really looked amazing at sometimes. Caleb Wilson for North Carolina has looked amazing sometimes. He just broke, I think, a bone in his hand. So he's out for a bit. And I'm not sure he'll even come back this season. You have Wagler for Illinois, who we've talked about. Braden Burries for Arizona has just, I mean, put together a really magnificent season. And we're not even talking about guys like Mykel Brown for Louisville, who is like the hot player during summer in international play. Nate Amet for Tennessee.
Got
There's
Acuff at
Acuff.
Arkansas.
Acuff at Arkansas, and then Santa Clara has Alan Graves, who's doing kind of like crazy 3-and-D stuff. So, and that's just the freshman. We're not even talking about all of them. You have Lindenberg there from Michigan that you at some point you're like, it's really hard to ignore. I know he's older, but it's hard to ignore what he's done. LeBaron Fylon for Alabama. I mean, there's just a ton of talent. Proven talent, guys that are really can put the ball in the basket and can really impact games. I'm not sure where Elijah really, fits into this model, but I will tell you this: if you flash forward one more to next year and what the mock drafts look like for 2027 as opposed to this year, I mean, I'm looking at one that's got Christian Collins as number one overall. We'll talk about him in a second, but. You're talking about guys like Teron Stokes. I mean, Bruce Branch. I'm not sure any of these guys are necessarily better NBA prospects than Elijah Arenas. I mean, if he were to stay, I think he's going to project right away to be like a top three pick in 2027. Just something to think about. I will say that a player that goes late lottery, like right around pick 14, 15, he's going to make about $5 million a year in the current NBA structure. If you go at the end of the first round, you're going to make about $3 million a year. So those are some numbers to think about if you're trying to replace the income from an NBA contract with NIL. So all that said, what are your thoughts on all this, Nick?
It's a fantastic draft. I mean, you can see why NBA teams are tanking like crazy to try to move up in it. But tons of star power. I think you have a lot of future all-stars. Even just comparing this draft to a couple drafts back when Risacher went one, like Peterson, DeBansa, Boozer, Ament, Caleb Wilson, Kingston Flemings, all these guys I think would go number one over Risacher. So
I mean,
you've got
don't you think Wagler would have gone number one, just given his scoring
Yeah,
output? I mean,
I think he would, and maybe even Braden Burries if you weren't like as Kylan Boswell's age, right? No, great draft. I mean, tons of both stars and role players in it. With Elijah, there's so much you can work on too. That's the thing. Like he's still so young. He reclassified in the first place. You have some clips. Like I don't know if you saw the clip circulating online of him getting double or triple teamed and Cam Wood standing wide open in the corner for three and then Arenas not passing him the ball.
Well, I remember that happening at the time. I mean, and I was also thinking that actually might be the right decision. So,
Maybe so, right? Maybe
if you
so.
don't, if you don't know our team, you might not know who that guy standing wide open in the corner is and why he's being left wide open in the corner.
Right. And that kind of feeds into the theory, right? That like it's a really tough roster construction for him. Like we don't have a lot of shooting and there's not a lot of floor spacing. And that makes it really tough for a freshman primary creator to be efficient, right? And team context matters on this stuff. And if you had Rodney Rice sitting in the corner and he passes Rodney Rice the ball and Rice makes the three, I think Arenas' shooting percentage and assist rates would look better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's another thing with, trying to get Mazzara back and see what kind of, because he can give you some shooting. But yeah, the numbers are pretty, I mean, they're just, I mean, frankly, terrible when it comes to shooting. Terrible to the point that I don't think we've ever, I can't remember ever having this situation, maybe under Kevin O'Neill, but we're shooting in the Big Ten games, we're shooting 28.5% from three. Now, obviously, when the focal point of your offense is on for outside shooting, has been hurt the entire conference play, and he's supposed to be like a volume 3-point shooter. That's going to hugely impact it. But it's something we're going to have to think about for next year's roster construction, because even if Rodney Rice comes back, which I'm hoping and anticipating, that's a likelihood, we're going to have to, he's going to have other shooting around him. And you can see that in these Big Ten games, here and there, Kofi will hit a three, but he's not kind of a reluctant 3-point shooter. He's actually shooting 33%, so it's not terrible. But, the guys around him, Cam Woods, the guy who was left wide open in the corner, is shooting under 20%. So,
Right. Lots of non-shooters, and Jerry Easter's a non-shooter at this point, right?
yeah.
And Terrence Williams, unfortunately, hasn't gotten the stroke
He has not
back
hit a
since his
he has not
injury.
hit a he has not hit a 3-pointer in conference play.
Right. Then Cornish is 2 of 11 in league from three, and Brownell is 11 of 39. So it's been like a particularly brutal 3-point stretch for the team, for
Yeah.
sure.
By the way, do you know how many field goals Terrence Williams has hit in Big Ten play?
Oh gosh, two.
But by the way, you're close. He's played in 13 games, so he's only not played in one of the games. He started three of them, and that's how many the amount of starts he has and the amount of field goal makes he has three.
Wow. Yeah.
Now we should say too that the freshmen we do have signed, which are the Ratcliffe brothers, you would not know this from their father, but they're actually 3-point specialists, 7-footer 3-point specialists. So now, does that carry over going from that transition from high school to college? We'll have to see. Those guys will take. I mean, they have not played a lot of games at the kind of elite level of high school yet. I saw them play. I saw Darius, who's the kind of plays as the five man as opposed to Adonis, who plays as the four man. Darius played against IMG Academy, so he had some really good competition in that game. He played great. He's not really a true post guy, but if you give him the ball in the in like within 10 feet of the post, he can kind of just take a little jumper, and he has a really nice touch. He's hit some threes in that game, so he did perform in that game. He blocked shots, so that's going to be key. But we'll have to see. We're going to be relying a lot on those guys, I think, and especially hitting shots. And then if the latest news, and I guess we can talk about this in a second. Christian Collins, who I just mentioned, is now projected number one in this one mock draft I'm looking at. Has had a tremendous senior season at St. John Bosco. His shooting has really come around. His stats online, it's only eight of the like 23 games they played, but he's shooting like, wasn't it like over 50% from three in those in that sample
Yeah.
size? Yeah, I don't
Yeah.
know what the actual numbers are, but when I watch highlights, I mean, he has a really flat shot, which is funny, but he hits them.
Right,
So
right.
as if we do have those guys on the team, it's great to have the shooting, but these are going to be freshmen. You guys making the transition from high school to college.
Right. I mean, if you look at Christian Collins' shooting splits in those 8 games on Max Preps, they have him at 19 of 35 from three. And yeah, I mean, sure, you could say that 35 3-point attempts is a small sample size, but he can miss his next 15 attempts, right? And then still be at 38%. So, pretty clearly there's growth there. And, they've got him at 42, 49 from the line, 86%. So he's come a long way as a shooter. And he can defend. I mean, he's a really good athlete at 6'8". I don't think he's like quite a Caleb Wilson level athlete. But he's good. The skill levels come around. Good bloodlines there, and I don't know if you saw the game, Chase, where he played Caleb Gaskins, the Miami commit.
I did not.
Okay, so Caleb Gaskins, he's at Columbus, which is the same high school the Boozer kids went to, and they had a higher ranked team than Bosco, and I think Christian had like 25 points, or something. He dominated the game, and Bosco upset those guys. So it was really impressive. And weaker class, obviously, but he does seem like the kind of guy who can actually impact winning as a freshman. And I don't know how many of the high school seniors you could legitimately say that about in this class.
Yeah, that's yeah, it does not look like a super deep class. We'll get a better look at the McDonald's All-American game is coming up. He's obviously playing in it along with the Ratliff brothers. The latest we're keep bringing up his name because even though he was originally kind of projected to go to SC back in the early fall, as the fall dragged on, there was like a some huge offer came from Kentucky, and all of a sudden all the projections went that Kentucky was going to get him. But they were not able to close the deal. So, do you know the name of Kentucky's? They're kind of like their, it's like they have a like a media company attached to their NIL program. Do you know about that?
Is it that JMI Sports?
Yeah, I think that's what it. I think that's what it's called. And I don't know all the details of how they operate. But it is JMI Sports, yeah. So it's not your kind of conventional collective as I understand it. And I know there's a lot of Kentucky fans online at least complain a lot about JMI Sports. I think they require the players that they give NIL to hand over all multimedia rights. To them and they that which they handle on behalf of UK. And I think that might have been a sticking point in the contract with Collins. Basically it's an exclusive. Like you cannot make any money outside of JMI is my understanding. They're allowed to they are have the right to kind of exploit your NIL, which they're paying for. But I guess Collins and his people were not willing to do that deal. And Kentucky has not actually signed a high school prospect for the class of 2027 and or 2026, sorry. And the thinking now is unless they get Stokes, they may not sign one at all, which is interesting. And then for this past year, they I think what was like okay, trying to look really quickly at their recruiting class from this past season. They did bring in okay, Jasper Johnson, that's right. They did bring in three guys who are top like 40-ish recruits, Malachi Moreno, Jasper Johnson, Braden Hawthorne, but no like top 10 lottery type recruits. And if you look at the performance of those guys, I think Malachi Moreno is averaging about 8.5 points a game, but these are not like one the old Calipari style one and done recruits. So I guess I think some of the thinking from the Kentucky fan base is that JMI is kind of acting as an obstacle to get these like super elite recruits.
Right. And they've got Jason Hart on their staff. And we know Jason's a phenomenal relationship builder and recruiter. So I don't think it's for lack of effort in the high school ranks. They've been in the mix for a few guys and just haven't gotten it done. So it does seem like JMI is an issue. I've seen a lot of takes that Mark Pope has too much on his plate. And like whenever there's a renegotiation, Pope just throws his hands up and says, "Okay, I'm out." So I'd anticipate they go more the European and the portal route, but it does seem like Arkansas under Calipari, they're kind of doing the same thing Kentucky did with still recruiting the elite, high school one and dones. They're supposed to get Jordan Smith out of Fairfax, who's a really good high school player. I think later today or tomorrow. So by the time the podcast is up, he'll probably be committed to Arkansas. But yeah, no, it's super interesting. But Stokes probably goes to Kansas. You got Jason Crow going to Missouri, so definitely not like the old days where you've got Kentucky, Duke, Kansas all cleaning up. For the high school players, they'll still get their fair share, but Kentucky especially seems to have taken a step back here.
Yeah, absolutely. Just,
What one more thing, Chase, just on the rat lifts. So I've seen a few clips of them, but I think you've seen them more than I have. You touched on the shooting, and they're pretty skilled, more skilled than their dad from the outside. And it seems like Adonis is more of the four and Darius is more of the five. They kind of seem like poor men's Evan Mobleys a little bit to me when I watch them play. Is that kind of the sense you get? And then stylistically, could you just describe their game a little bit for the viewers?
Well, yeah. So I'm almost. I'd say it's. I honestly, I would say it's like a taller. I was going to say Benny Boatwright because I don't know if that's correct because I think Benny had some overall offensive skill that these guys don't have, but the shooting is very similar. I mean, both of these guys are shooters. They're both shooters. Even that you can kind of split hairs and say, okay, Adonis is really the perimeter guy, and Darius is really the low block guy. I mean, honestly, I don't think it's quite that big of a difference in their games. They both shoot, they have both beautiful shots from the outside. If you leave them open, they're going to knock down shots. Even if you don't leave them open, they might not knock down shots. They're not terribly skilled when it comes to like inside. Around the basket moves. I think maybe what separates the two from just kind of a shot making standpoint is that Adonis does have a little bit more shot making skills, particularly if he's not going to lead, just shoot a three pointer. But they're both long and can block shots, and they don't really have necessarily the athleticism of their dad. I mean, their dad. The big thing about their dad was, I mean, he was only like 6'9", but he just was like crazy athlete, which made him such an amazing defensive player. These guys are like legit 7 footers. They don't necessarily need to be quite as like have quite as bouncy as their dad. So they jump well, but they're not crazy bouncy like their dad was. But they're so big and long. They are very long. They're going to block a lot of shots just because they have so much length and size. So yeah, I think I'm trying to think of what a good comp would be on these guys. You don't find a lot of like 7 footers whose main scoring output comes from behind the arc, right? But that's really what these guys are, and they have great frames, so they can really fill out a little more. I don't know where you put them as far as NBA prospects go. I mean, clearly the NBA values a 3-point shooting, and these guys have not done much to develop like kind of interior post moves, which is something that would help you more in college level. But at the same time, they're not like kind of like super crazy athletes. So I'm not sure how much, where the NBA would value that aspect of their game. But they're the kind of guys that could have a very large impact on games just because of their length and size inside. They're very coordinated, they have nice hands. Like this, they're not as tall as Gabe Dines, but the difference between them and Gabe Dines is just, they're just much more comfortable with catching a ball, having the ball in their hands, those kinds of things.
Right. I mean, the only reason I brought up Evan Mobley is they both do need to add weight. So Darius is listed at 6'11", 210, Adonis 6'11", 215. And you compare that to Tyron Stokes, who's only 6'7", but he's 230 pounds. So I do think, kind of like Evan, they need to add some strength to their frame. But Evan was a unicorn. I mean, he's just a phenomenal athlete. I don't think these guys are in that stratosphere, but just from more of a body type standpoint. I think that's somewhat close.
Yeah, they're not. I'd say their body is much closer to Isaiah Mobley than Evan. They're taller. I mean, they're not. They don't really look to me. They don't really look skinny. I mean, they could definitely add weight to their frame, but you see a lot of guys. I mean, they're what is Kofi listed at weight wise?
It's like, is he like a 6'10", 230? Let me see here. Six ten 231 on the
Okay,
USC site.
my guess is that these guys are probably closer to 220, 225. I mean, that you get them in a weight room for a month, and they'll probably both be, 230 is my guess. If you were to, they do not really strike me as skinny. Let me put it that way. They're not like bony guys, and they got some muscle tone already. I think they can all, you just add a little bit of muscle very, very comfortably. I'm guessing they'll play next season at 235, 240 is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, if they get to that weight, right? Like they'll be big enough to impact the game. Because you do see some of these guys who come in as freshmen, right? And they're just too skinny, and they get kind of overwhelmed with the strength of college basketball. But it wasn't like Theo was a super skinny guy either at the NBA level. He was what, 225, 230. So they probably fill out to, similar frames like that, I'd imagine.
And like I said, if you watch their frame, I mean, they don't. Evan looked a lot more lean than these guys. If you see them, maybe it's just because these guys wear baggier clothes, but they don't. They, to me, they legitimately do not look like they're like a weight is a concern. I'm just looking at some pro highlights from the from some games in the last month or so, and to me, they don't really look skinny. Is I think, and you, like I said, you put them in the right weight program for like a month, they're gonna fill out nicely, and I think they'll be right at 230, 235 is my guess.
Yep. So just to round out the Ratliff segment, Adonis is now 15th in the 24/7 composite, and Darius is 19th. So, they're kind of more on the fringe, one and done, spots in the rankings here, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But definitely guys that will be in the rotation next year, almost assuredly. And I guess that brings us to roster construction for next year, Chase. I mean, you have the three McDonald's All-Americans. If you're able to close on Collins, two bigs with a Ratliff. So then Collins, I would probably describe as like a 3-4 combo forward type. And you look at Rodney Rice. It seems like it's a pretty fantastic core.
Well, I think
But
you have to add Kofi to that, right? You got to really
right.
hope that Kofi is back. Kofi is really one of the premier defensive players in the country. I think he might not be fully appreciated for just how good he is on defense, but he's really, really good. And he's kind of
Yeah.
a developing offensive game. I think it will be even better next season. I'd love to see him put on a little weight, just a little muscle tone. But yeah, I mean, if that's your kind of basic core, and you'd hope to you'd bring a guy like Amarian Dickerson back, just because, for Amarian Dickerson, it's like, what? Well, it just doesn't seem like it makes sense to like try to go somewhere else, right? You're gonna have an extra year of eligibility. Just stick around, do what you're supposed to do this past season. If you're assuming that there's money in there for that, then the rest of the roster, obviously the huge question mark is Elijah Arenas. Everyone kind of assumes he goes to the NBA, but like again, it's a strange year where. He could stand to make a lot more money if he went the year after, but we'll still have to see how the season finishes and where he projects in the lottery and things, or if he projects in the lottery. And then, yeah, how do you fill out the roster? Well, do you bring back Jerry Easter? Do you bring back Jordan Marsh? What are you looking for out of the portal to the extent you even want to look at the portal? I mean, it's some part of me says, just try to keep all the guys you currently, there's no reason not to keep all the guys you currently have. Now, the argument could be say, well, we have some redundant players. If you have, do you really want to have Marsh and Easter and Roddy Rice on the same team? Because you're going to really need to get another starting. You really want to have a starting shooter to go next to Rice if it's not Arenas. You're going to need to start Collins in the three, and you'll have Dickerson out there as well. You have Dines as the backup potentially. I would say definitely keep Dines. You're starting to see him emerge as a bit of a defensive player and rebounder even a little bit in recent games. So yeah, that's my thinking is try to keep as many of the current guys you have, and maybe focus on depending on if Arenas is back or not, focus on one or two big additions from the portal. Focus on shooting. That's kind of like what my thoughts are. And where are you at?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's going to depend on price tags to a certain extent, right? Like, I look at Gabe Dines and Jordan Marsh and kind of group them together as they'd be really nice bench pieces. Marsh in like that backup point guard role where he can give you some Some instant offense if your team is struggling, even though he lacks the size of a power five starter. And then Gabe Dines, like, probably don't want him starting on a contending team, but can play some pretty nice rotation minutes, especially in certain matchups. And I think you've seen that the last couple of weeks, as he's gotten more comfortable in Big Ten play. But then I look at those two guys, like, what if another power four team, like, I don't know, like a Wake Forest or Penn State, that's maybe a little bit lower in power four, decides, okay, I want to go pay one of those guys to be a starter for them, right? Like, I could easily see them sticking at the high major level, but maybe at a not quite as talented high major, and getting starter money in NIL there. So, I'm sure, like, them and their teams are going to look at their options in that regard, and they're going to have to decide what's best for them. Whereas Jerry Easter, I just don't think he has the tape yet to, get starter money. He'd probably either have to transfer down to the mid-major level, to be a starter, or he goes to another high major and tries to crack the rotation there. So I think he's in a little bit different of a circumstance because he doesn't have the tape and the production. So, yeah, like, those guys, I'm sure they'll all explore their options, and we'll have to see how it shakes out. But pretty clear to me, like, you want Rice back, you want Kofi back. I think Dickerson would be really nice to have. Again, depending on the role, because you are a little bit crowded, with the Ratliffs, Jacob Kofi, and Christian Collins all in the all in the front court there. So, yeah, like, it's going to be a lot about the money. And I'm sure there are going to be some conversations about role allocation, and there's absolutely going to be some friction here. Like, I don't think you expect as much friction as last year, where both Desmond Claude and Wesley Yates pick up and go to Washington. But like, there will undoubtedly be changes to the roster.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It's a different situation than last year. During this past portal season for football, even though people made a big, the total number of transfers was high, the actual number of transfers from, power conference schools of guys who were playing significant, like, rotational minutes in football was relatively low. There wasn't, like, a lot of talent out there, of guys who have proven talent in football. So you saw a reduction of that. I think part of that was because of the House settlement. We'll have to see how it goes with basketball. I don't know if there's going to be, like, these crazy NIL offers in the transfer portal again this year. I have a feeling the answer is going to be there may not be. I mean, you're already starting to see a little bit of crackdown from the Deloitte commission with LSU. I think people may be a little nervous if the question is, hey, should we just spend money to keep our own guys as opposed to spend money to, like, poach some guy off another team? I think they're going to be more inclination to just spend money to keep your own guys, is my guess. We'll have to see how that works out. I mean, in college football, they did go after the quarterbacks, so there was a hot market for quarterbacks, but it wasn't like there's a hot market for, I mean, there was, like, four receivers that were really interesting, a couple running backs, not really many offensive linemen. I mean, it was there wasn't, like, a lot of marquee talent, like top end talent, available in basketball. And we'll have to, or in football, we'll have to see how that goes in basketball.
For sure. And you do look at some of the roster construction, what it looks like for the contending teams. Lots of teams are going to be very active in the portal. Like, you look at Duke, and they're going to have to replace Cam Boozer and Isaiah Evans and Malik Brown. And it's not like they went out and signed, they've got some McDonald's All-Americans coming in, but it's not of the Cam Boozer, Konkan Nipple, Cooper Flag level. So, like, that's a team that's going to be very active in the, high end of the portal. And same with, like, the Houstons and the Floridas, and UConn losing Braylon Mullins, and a lot of these, you have a lot of very veteran teams in college basketball right now. And they're not going to have the high school, elite high school talent that's going to step in and, be a 20-point a game guy from day one. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very active portal season, and we're just going to have to see how it shakes out.
Anything else you want to cover before we get out of here?
That's all I got, Chase. Anything else from you?
No, I think that's it. So I guess until next time, big fight on to everybody.
Fight on all.
Fight on. We'll talk to you next time.